hearing on House Bill 1525, legislative agencies, and we're waiting for a quorum to go into work session on another bill we need to deal with, so we will stop and interrupt and proceed with that when we get another senator here. Good morning, Penny. Would you like to share with us the information?
I'll try to go through before you get to the other bill, the LSO overview portion on the legislative branch agencies. We've passed out our analysis that appeared in our big book, and then if you go beyond that, because I'm sure you've all read it very carefully, you know exactly what's in there. And two, we've got some pie charts at the end that show you a broad overview of the legislative branch. To point out, first of all, that the legislature has all of its budgets in one bill, but the agencies that have distinct budgets, they are separate state agencies. They have separate enabling legislation, but it is more convenient to look at it all in one big bill since we are relatively small. Compared to the executive branch. The first pie chart you see shows the branch overall with the Legislative Administration Committee with a budget of just under $23 million and is 38% of the cost. The Legislative Assembly, 26% of the cost, and all the other agencies, smaller agencies, comprise about 19% of the cost at just over $11 million. It's a $60 million general fund budget. The all other agencies that are there consist of the Legislative Fiscal Office, the Legislative Revenue Office, the Commission on Indian Services, and the Legislative Council, and you can see there how they break out in terms of their percentage of cost. On the next page, we have a table that gives the current biennium budget and the 2001-03 budget request, and then the percent of the increase or decrease. As each of the entities goes through and describes its budget, it can clarify for you the reasons for either the decrease, which generally is the phasing out of one-time projects, or increases and the variance in the increases. Legislative Administration Committee, for example, tends to have the policy packages that affect the legislature overall, so there's always in their request a little bit higher percentage increase because of the number of policy packages that they have. And then the next box just gives you some of the major budget drivers on the, of the legislative branch. The next page is a little bit confusing, but it gets to an issue that ultimately will need to be discussed. The governor's budget in the past has not made a recommendation with respect to legislative branch, and for that matter, judicial branch budgets. This is the first time that the governor's budget has reduced the legislative branch budget, and this is sort of a complicated way that I isolated how that was done. Because the governor, in doing so, did not make any policy decisions by identifying what would be reduced, for ease, I suppose, they simply went and took the whole reduction out of the Legislative Administration Committee, leaving it up to the legislature on how to resolve the issue.
He wanted that out of House District 60 is where he wanted that from. So I do know that.
In effect, by taking that out of the all out of the Legislative Administration Committee, there was actually a policy package approved in the Legislative Assembly's budget because he didn't look at any of the other budgets. And so this, in effect, what this does is show you that all of the policy packages in the Legislative Administration Committee are eliminated, including one that is, they'll be talking about later, in effect, an essential package, and that's the continuation of a multi-biennium technology transition that is in midstream. What I've done on the top of this is isolate what, in effect, is a 2.4% reduction to the current service level, services and supplies budget, and then spread that out. If it had not all been taken out of the Legislative Administration Committee's budget, how it would have affected all of the budgets, and that's what the prorated 2.4% shows you. I should point out that in the co-chair's and leadership budgets, the reductions that are in the governor's budget are restored. But as you go through the individual budgets, you will want to discuss the policy packages that are in them. And later on, more toward the end of the legislative session, when we come back to do a work session, the legislative leadership offices and caucus offices will have a better picture of where they want to go with this budget. And I'm sure the chair of the committee is familiar with that process, having been a speaker in the past. If there are any questions, I entertain them. Otherwise, I suppose we can either go to the other group or we can just start and leave them to later.
I think since we don't have a senator here yet, we'll go ahead with where we are. Are there any questions of Peggy before we begin? If not, Mr. Henderson, you want to come up? Good morning.
He wants it all out of District 60.
He wants it all out of District 60. I see.
Works for me.
Yeah. Works for Representative Johnson. Be careful how much you suggest.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dave Henderson, the legislative administrator, and we found a simple way to restore the cuts, and I don't believe the governor has seen the increase in his rent on his office space yet. There are ways for us to solve our problem.
There goes my state of Eastern Oregon bill.
Legislative administration is the agency that provides much of the administrative support to the assembly and the other offices within the legislative branch. We do that through five functional units, and you can see our organization chart in your the book, and it is behind the tab, the agency summary tab.
Is that this top book?
Yes.
And it's called what?
It's agency summary, and it's on budget page 47. In addition to the administrator's office, we've got five functional units. Within the administrator's office, we provide the services of a project manager who manages various projects for the entire branch, the legislative liaison who is maintaining web pages for the members. Visitor services is now within the administrator's office, and that's the group that works at the kiosk and takes all of your constituents for tours when they come and visit the building. Then beyond the administrator's office, committee services staffs all of your standing committees during session, and then they also staff task forces and committees during the interim, as well as maintaining the legislative library. Information systems runs all of the computer systems in the building, from your PCs that are in your offices to the mainframe on which all the bill drafting and measure tracking is done. And they also do the media services in the building, which includes maintaining all the sound systems and the camera systems in the hearing rooms and on the floor of the House and the Senate. Facility services maintains the Capitol building itself. They do all of the maintenance, any remodeling, construction that is done, custodial care, they run the heating and cooling systems. And then they also, through the Publications and Distribution Office, do distribution of mail. They've got supplies available, and they are the ones who distribute to the desks the daily publications during the legislative session. Employee Services maintains all the human resource functions for the legislative branch, including payroll, benefits, PERS, and recruitment, hiring. Everything that has to do with bringing people in and having them here for session and then processing them out after session, as well as all the time during the interim when we've got continuing staff. And then finally, Financial Services does all of the budgeting and accounting for legislative administration, provides some of those services to fiscal and revenue, and does all the maintaining of the members' accounts for both when you're here in session and when you're home for the interim. Some of the projects that we have worked on over the course of the last 2 years, just to give you an idea of what it is we do, and I'll just very briefly run through these, would include, and I'm sorry, this is not in your book, but We've done several remodeling projects in the building through our facilities office. That includes a remodel of the Legislative Council office, remodel of the caucus offices. We also added an ADA accessible restroom on the third floor of the old building. There are a number of people in wheelchairs who go to hearings in 343 and 357, and there were no handicap accessible facilities there, so we've added those. We did a significant upgrade of the elevators, which, as you may have noticed in the last few weeks, is still ongoing. That was required by code. During last summer, we completely recaulked the old portion of the building because we had water coming in between the marble, and so we had to take out all the old caulk, replace that, and then we cleaned the entire building, both old and new. During that process, we discovered that the gold man was getting a little bit thin on his coating, so we regilded the gold man using money that was still available from 1984 when the kids donated their dimes to do that project. We did an extensive project involving wiring in the old portion of the building where we still had cloth-coated wiring, which was a fire hazard. And we removed all that and replaced panels and wiring, so we did a significant upgrade there. We had an option package to clean all the ductwork in the building, and we learned when we put that out to bid that it was not large enough to do all of it. We were able to do all the ductwork in the old portion of the building, so that was all thoroughly cleaned. We were not able to do the wings, but you'll see when we get to our option packages that we do have a package in now to do the wings during the next interim. We did a remodel of our control room for legislative media. If you ever saw the old control room, it was really almost a closet, and they were packed in there and did not have any room to expand. In the last several months, we have expanded our media coverage, including adding more cameras to hearing rooms so that you now have closed circuit TV coverage of every hearing room. So we needed to expand the control room for our legislative media, and we did that in the last interim. That pretty much summarizes the facilities projects. We had a number of projects within information systems as well. The largest of which we will revisit in option packages as well is the technology transition. This came out of the 1995 legislature when they first had a discussion about the fact that our legacy mainframe system was no longer supported by IBM and that it was something that we needed to look at replacing it with newer, more flexible technology. Actually, in the last 2 years, made some great steps forward in finalizing a project plan, identifying 23 distinct projects to go through, and we completed several of those projects during the last interim, the largest of which was probably our committee agenda scheduling system. We took that off of the mainframe and are now running that on a new system so that has freed up mainframe capacity to be able to do the other things such as bill drafting. And the systems that the chief clerk and the secretary of the Senate run are now able to run more efficiently on the mainframe because we have the agenda scheduling system off of there. Some other projects that were done with NIS, obviously the Y2K project we went through and came through with very minor problems. There were only about two problems that we were not able to identify ahead of time and resolve. They were not mission critical, and we were able to resolve them shortly after they were identified during our testing as the time rolled over into year 2000. We have a couple of projects that are ongoing right now that will affect you. One is remote access, so that when you do go home at the end of session, you'll be able to access information here on the computer system. It is available now, but the system that is operating is very cumbersome. And folks who have used it have found that it's not very efficient in trying to do any work. So we're upgrading that system so that it will be much easier for you to access the system after this session. We are doing a study right now to determine whether we should replace our email system. We've got far more use of it than we anticipated several years ago when we put in that system. So we are analyzing whether it should be replaced. Other projects, we redesigned the legislative website. It's much more user-friendly now, and we've gotten a number of compliments on how effective it is at this point. And again, we created a legislative liaison position within the administrator's office, which now maintains your web pages on a day-to-day basis. We had a serious problem of having timely information on the website during the last session, and we believe we've resolved that by having a person responsible for monitoring it on a day-to-day basis. Within legislative media, as I said, we upgraded the coverage in the hearing rooms. Each hearing room now has a camera so that you are able to, on the closed circuit system, watch the proceedings without having to leave your office, so that hopefully your staff time, your time, and the time of agencies on the Capitol Mall is used more effectively, because they have to spend less time sitting in hearing rooms, and they're able to monitor it from their offices. We are now doing video streaming of selected hearings on the internet. We added audio streaming 2 years ago and had a lot of interest in that, and we've expanded that to include video streaming. And we've also expanded our coverage of hearings that is now made available to cable TV systems in Portland to 2 hours, and it is now closed captioned. So those who are hard of hearing are able to observe the proceedings and able to monitor those. That gives you a brief rundown of projects we've worked on during the past 2 years, and I would be happy to answer any questions on those or go into our option packages for the next period, if whatever you prefer.
I'll have you wait, Dave, now that I have my other senator here, and we're going to go ahead and do what I announced earlier.
Okay.
Thank you. We'll come back to you in a minute.
Great.
We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 5025 and open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3088 relating to the electrical trade license fee. Lori.
Chair Clarno, members of the subcommittee, we're here today to continue to work on House Bill 3088. There were a lot of questions of the discussion yesterday, and I believe the agency has some additional information that's been called.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Brewer. I'm the administrator of the Building Codes Division. I'm here today to respond to questions, inquiries with respect to several issues that were raised yesterday. Being passed out now, some information that we've put together with respect to those questions. The first page number one, is a couple of graphs from the Oregon Office of Economic Analysis, speaking to the relative condition of the construction industry and our current economic situation. The first graph indicates both the national picture, which is the heavier, lighter graph line. The Oregon situation is indicated by the gray straight line. As you can see, the construction industry in terms of employment growth, which is one of the indicators we use to track demand for our services, continues to grow at a very slow pace. The discussion yesterday was about the relative turndown in the economy and where that left the construction industry. We're tracking these indicators along with information we gather locally and information we get from services on the federal level. And we believe that the current projection for slow growth in the area of 2-3% is realistic, and our current budget request was created around a current service level budget indicating a flat economic situation. So we tried to address this very conservatively. Any questions on graph number one?
So how do your FTE compare to 96 and 98?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, the FTE that currently are in our budget compared to 96-98 in terms of the economic situation, it tracks linearly. The FTE we requested in our budget were limited duration positions that we obtained in the past two biennia, And the request this session was to make those positions permanent, because we're observing this growth on the ground as it takes place, and we feel that workload is going to be consistent, it's going to be continual.
I didn't understand that.
Well, he didn't answer the question, but I'm going to try again. I want to know, in 1996, how many FTE you had, in 1998, how many you had, and how many are in this current budget. 96 being, according to this graph, the peak of the construction, or at least your, I guess, your workload or the construction workload. 98 being the bottom, and then today. So
let's see if I can get some help in answering that question. Unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, we don't have the information with respect to the actual FTE count with us. My recollection is that we added on the order of 4 to 5 FTE each biennium. Again, they were given to us in terms of limited duration positions. The growth that's indicated on the graph has been maintained over that period. The general growth in the construction industry, along with what's represented in graph number 2, housing starts, are really the key indicators we use to track our workload. The FTE, since I joined the division in 1995, has grown, and has grown in a linear fashion, very consistent with the continued growth we've seen in the construction industry. If anything, we've lagged that growth. And I'd be happy to get you actual numbers. Unfortunately, I didn't bring those to speak.
I would like to see the numbers. I think what I hear you saying is that you geared up and you've maintained that. And yesterday we were talking about if we were to remove the emergency clause, which takes delays for 6 months the actual implementation of the increase, what impact would that have? I guess I'm more inclined to believe that if you staffed up for the 95-96 time period and have remained pretty constant with that it would do less damage.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, it's important to understand that what we're looking at here is a macro situation, and I tried to answer your question from the standpoint of a macro response. This bill deals specifically with the electrical industry, where there has been very limited growth in our program. The major growth we've seen in our program over the past two biennia has been in the elevator program and in the boiler program. That's where we receive the predominance of our limited duration positions. We have seen growth in the electrical program in terms of the additional work we picked up from the prison projects, as well as light rail. And I've got another illustration in the package here, which we can speak to with respect to what the impacts of eliminating the emergency clause would be, so that we can talk about those options and at the committee's pleasure with respect to
that. I don't think you've geared up a lot in the last 2 years. What I suspect is that you geared up prior to that, and then you've maintained that level. And if indeed construction has fallen off, and the projections are that will continue to fall off, or continue to maintain at a lower level than it has been, then I think that's something worth looking at.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dukes, I understand, but looking at this particular situation, this bill, from the standpoint of the electrical industry, I believe is somewhat different than looking at construction from a macro standpoint.
Well, all you gave me was information of construction on a macro standpoint, so that's all I have in front of me.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, that's what I understood the question to be yesterday, so I apologize. Again, the second graph is...
Representative Hayden.
Just before we leave this subject, yes, looking at this graph, it appears that you have negative construction employment in 2001, and you look for it to remain flat for the next 5 years. And my question would be, how many FTE did you have in 1991 when you had negative construction employment? And would that be the same as what you're projecting to have in 2005 and 2007?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I believe the graph that indicates Oregon's economic situation implies construction basically bottoming out in 1998. and continuing to grow at somewhat less than a 5% level through 2001, and is expected to continue on through 2007. The brighter line with the boxes included on it, that's the U.S. economic standpoint from the construction industry, and the gray line is the Oregon economic situation.
I see that.
So I, again, I, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I don't observe a negative economic situation in the year 2001. What appears to be to me is somewhere between 2 to 3% growth in that time span, and a projection for continued growth at a very slow rate compared to past years.
Mr. Chair, I would, just looking at that, it seems pretty much flatline. Although, according to the graph, and numbers take on a life of their own once they're written down, we tend to say, oh, it's got to be true because it's on paper. But it's still a prophecy. You know, it's reading the tea leaves. And so we're projecting flat growth at less than, on the order of 2 to 3% for the next some years. My question is, how many FTE did you have in 1991 to handle the workload, and how many will you need in 2005 to handle about the same workload?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I'd have to come back at a later time with that specific information. I didn't bring that FTE breakdown with me. I'd be happy to gather that information and come back.
Representative Johnson?
I guess I just listened to the exchange between Mr. Brewer and Senator Deuce, and I know that I'm new at this process, but I didn't understand any of it. And it seems to me that the question that Representative Hayden just asked about how many did you have in 1991 and how many will you need in 2003 seems to be rather germane to what we're talking about. I guess I'm looking for guidance from the chair in no small measure to sort of understand where we're headed. Because without that answer, I don't know how we can answer the question that you're asking us.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, I believe it's important to understand that the graph implies growth, an actual increase in workload over time, so that when you look at the situation in 1998 being no growth, that means that's at the same level as the year before. There's a cumulative effect of growth over time. I'd be happy to bring back the FTE counts and have that discussion with respect to relative workload. I simply didn't bring that information this morning. I'm not prepared in that respect.
Madam Chair, may I digress just slightly from this topic and ask a question that we asked the other day, and perhaps you're not the one to answer this, perhaps the other gentleman is the one to answer, but you say that industry supports these fee increases, and my question is, were they polled? Do you have any numbers written down? Do you have a ballot that you sent out? How do we know that the rank and file does agree? Were they surveyed, and do you have anything definitive? Did more than 10% contacted? Was it a selected group that were contacted, or was it everybody?
Mr. Landry, you may want to identify yourself for the record and go ahead and respond to Representative Hayden's question.
Chair Clarke, members of the committee, I'm Joe Landry, representing National Electrical Contractors Association and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. The way that we make our decisions for support of these type of fees is we have a legislative committee that looks over all the issues that come before the legislature, and they to have been working with the department for many years and have actually had this dialogue and agreed that now that it's been 16 years that they could, although no one's ever favorable to increasing their fees, that they could support this fee increase.
So it was a committee of how many people?
We have 12 people on our legislative committee.
And did they make any attempt to poll their members?
They are, Chair Clarke, Representative Hayden, They're representative of contractors throughout the state. We have both Southern Oregon contractors and Portland chapter contractors from small companies of only a few employees to companies with over 1,000 wiremen. So it's a pretty broad spectrum of the type of companies that will be dealing with these fees. And so although they didn't poll their members, they're pretty pretty good example of a wide range of the industry.
Thank you. Thank you for the digression, Madam Chair.
Thanks that much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Joe Brewer, this comes back to graph number one, recognizing that this represents cumulative growth over time. Do you have a sense that we're more efficient? If the combination of all of this growth from 1991 through 2001, where we are today, let's say that were to total 15% growth in the construction industry. I'm not sure just exactly how that's measured, if that's measured in the number of people that are in the construction industry or additional construction or just how that's measured. But do you have a sense that we've become more efficient within building codes in that process in relationship to, let's say, that it's accumulated 30%? Have we stayed with our efficiencies and technology that we're well below the market, that perhaps we've increased our department 20% when the nation's construction employment growth has gone 30%?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, if the question is posed with respect to relative FTE compared to growth in employment in the construction industry, I believe the division has continued to be very conservative in its requests. Again, I'm somewhat at a loss without the actual numbers to provide to you. I can share with you the division works with its employees, with its stakeholders, to try and streamline our processes and make them more effective anywhere that we can. I think an example of that is our bill this session that would streamline the whole licensing process, take the number of licenses in the low voltage area from 11 to 2, recognizing that brings administrative efficiencies for all the jurisdictions that work on these issues, as well as the division, and makes things simpler for the industry. Another area in which we've enhanced service in the licensing area is we now provide photo licenses, very similar to your Oregon driver's license. In the past, we heard anecdotally that the paper licenses, the cardboard licenses that were given out by the division might be shared at the coffee shop. So today you're a plumber, but tomorrow you could be an electrician. So we went in and we put photo ID on each of those licenses so that now that the person checking licenses in the field can make sure that's the individual that's actually doing the work. So yes, Representative Butler, I feel as though we have made efficiencies, we have streamlined our processes and enhanced service where the industry has recognized the need for that.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up, Representative Butler.
Thank you. When you then talk about that we have maintained during a short period of time here the current service level and you indicate flat growth, does that mean current service level at 2.5% or flat growth at remaining within the construction industry cumulative growth over time?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, what I mean by current service level is the division is asking for no more FTE this biennium or for the biennium 01-03 than we had in the biennium 99-01. We have maintained a flat resource request in a period of relative slow growth. So that, again, we're trying to be conservative in terms of our fiscal request of the legislature.
And it's kind of a spin-off from that, Madam Chair. You've indicated that the very limited growth, using your terms, very limited growth in the electrical industry. However, there's been rather substantial growth in the elevator and boiler. Are we using one program to subsidize another?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, the division is restricted from doing that. All of our funds are dedicated, all the fees we collect are dedicated for use in the area that they're collected in. So boiler fees are used only for the boiler program. Electrical fees are used only for the electrical program.
Okay, and one final question as I move down. Again, using your words, Joe, you've indicated that you've streamlined and you've got administrative efficiencies. In visiting with legislative fiscal staff this morning, some of these fees are only, there may be as many as 8,000 licenses, but they're only renewed in October every 3 years, all 8,000 of them. Is that an efficient use of our resources? Or should these licenses perhaps be renewed every 3 years over a period of one-third of them each year?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I believe that's one approach that could be taken, and certainly we can look at that. The division administers in the electrical area only 32 licenses. What we try to do is schedule those licensing renewals where statute allows so that we have a continuous stream of renewals. Now, there are peaks and valleys, and certainly electrical journey level workers is probably our largest group of licensees being renewed all at one time.
Could we get numbers, Joe? Please, Madam Chair. Please,
yes.
Please, Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, the numbers of journey level workers being licensed in at the period 10-103 is 8,254, as indicated on page number 2, the box at the bottom of the page, electrical journeyman triannual renewal. So we have 8,200 plus renewing at that point in time. Another example is on page 3. At the top of page 3, electrical supervisor's license in the year 02 will be renewing 2,673 supervisor's licenses. The numbers change from period to period, but there is a continual stream of renewals as well as the ongoing new work in the licensing section. I can bring back specific numbers of all of our licensees if that's what the committee would like.
But Madam Chair, if I may, I just want to follow up because this is something that we have done in the last two biennia. I encourage departments to utilize the resource. You referred to some of this by way of anecdotally, and so let me use also an anecdote. If I have to gear up for staff to accommodate 8,254 journeyman electrician licenses on 10-1-03, and I have the staff that's necessary to take care of all of those licenses on that particular day or during that particular month, or let's say it's a period of 2 months, a month and change before and a few days afterwards, and then I'm all done basically with those licenses and some other licenses that may come in during that period of time of the other kinds of licenses, and I've staffed up to accommodate those licenses, then I get kind of used to those folks being around to kind of give me some cover when I need some additional help. And I'm just wondering if we use temporaries, is that what we do, or do we shift around within the office to, and again, Joe, your comment is that we can't shift and use the electrical or the electrician's licenses and funds to subsidize another account. So I'm wondering what happens in this interim with this group of folks that are helping us get those licenses done this October of 03.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, the division has worked to cross-train its staff in these areas so that you might have one individual who, for instance, their primary function is to license boiler or elevator journey-level workers. That person's also cross-trained in the electrical area, plumbing area, all the other areas we serve, so that when we reach a peak period like this, that staff will shift, will work on those other areas. The costs for those staff are distributed to the different funds based on the number of licensees. So we feel that's the most appropriate way to share those costs. So there might be a portion of that individual's time who works typically in the elevator area, that would be charged to the electrical program during that renewal period. But again, it's based on the number of licenses. So we go through an annual review of our cost allocation plan to ensure that it's up to date, to ensure that it reflects our best estimates of how those costs should be shared. Representative Butler, Madam Chair, we may bring in a temporary or two during a period such as this, but it's always our goal to maintain those temporaries as temporaries and move them out with on schedule so there's no carryover, because I'm certainly sensitive to the cost related to bringing temporary staff on. I believe it's certainly not as effective as permanent staff. So we've gone through an entire process of cross-training our staff so they can make contribution when the large numbers come through.
Madam Chair, in that regard, I just really want to be sensitive to the fact that I don't want to throw myself in the middle of how the Building Codes Division goes out and licenses supervisors, contractors, or journeymen. But I think that in that same vein, the electrical industry should expect of the Building Codes Division that we would have the maximum and best utilization of people who were cross-trained and people who are brought in as temporaries to assist us during these pig in the python kind of times, if I can call it. I can't call it that. These large bulk of folks flowing through the system at one time. And so, thank you for helping me be politically correct, Richard.
Just paint a picture, you know. Some of us with good imaginations.
Some of us with weak stomachs.
But I just would like to know of our legislative fiscal office if where we are, first of all, where we are being called to make a decision once in 16 years of anywhere from a 40% to a 35% increase in these license fees. And number two, where we're called to do it in an emergency situation. And finally, where we now know that there are as many as 8,254 licenses that may be more or less, that may be renewed during a period of 30 to 45 days. I'm wondering if we're in a position to make a recommendation that the licenses should be considered, that they bring us back some sort of a budget note. And I recognize this isn't a budget, but it certainly would lend itself to a budget note of that kind.
Chair Carno, Representative Butler, if you will recall, when we worked on the budget for the Department of Consumer and Business Services, there is a budget note for the Building Codes Division that specifically discusses the review of the electrical program. And I see no reason why the fee relicensing schedule cannot be a part of the information that they bring back regarding that program. So I think this fits right in with the budget note that's already been approved
for
the department.
Madam Chair, my concern is that this would be, and I recognize that there's some technicality now where these licenses are photo sensitive and those kinds of things. So it's got to take some degree of time to get the licenses done and some degree of expertise. And I wouldn't want to lose that from one department to the next within the Building Codes Division, nor would I want to, in any way potentially give ourselves to error in issuing these licenses. And so if there was a way to divide that 8,300 licenses up to 2,400 a year or something like that, 3,000 a year over a period of the 3 years, so that people could be renewing perhaps on their birth dates and odd years or something of that nature, so that you could make these licenses. And I recognize that some of them really don't lend themselves to a multiple 2 year. For instance, from my understanding that maybe the contractor being an annual and the journeyman 3 years, it may actually lend itself more to a 2 year renewal at 135 divided by the 3 years, take that times two and work that out. So that, but if we could have them, and they have, I'm confident that with the staff that they've got, they have all of the tools that are necessary to go in and develop a better method of doing this so that they keep good staff that are able to make these licenses, the sets that are being done by at the people at the front desk and wherever they're being issued could be doing electrical one day and contractors the next and plumbers in the same afternoon right in with the same group and be expected to see that not just every October will they be seeing this group of electricians licenses or every 3 years.
Mr. Landry from the industry, do you want to comment on others?
Chair Carno, I represent Butler. I guess I think it's more of an administrative decision as to what would be the most efficient way to get the licensing done. I think it is
but
more.
But you don't feel that in the industry that the licensees would oppose a change on the system?
The change would be renewing their licenses on different dates, sort of.
Well, for instance, like what he mentioned on birthdays, I think in the real estate industry your license is renewed on your birthday. That type of thing, so that there would be a staggered process.
Chair Clarno, Reverend Butler, I think that it might be easier for enforcement of whether or not these people maintain their license if they all have the same date. It seems to me that although I don't know how to deal with the pig in the python issue that you're talking about. That is a good question. But as one of the main issues that we're concerned with is enforcement of these elaborate licensing and code requirements that we have, and which is one of the main things we look for from our licensing fees. And I think it's easier for the inspector or the compliance officer that's going around he's checking licenses. He knows when people need to have renewed or paid their fee, these type of things. So sometimes it's easier for enforcement if it's all on the same date.
Senator Dukes, you had a question?
If you're not familiar with your licensing system, I should probably sit and
It seems as though we're making this sound like a really complicated thing. Anybody here have a Costco card? How difficult can this be? I mean, you have certain things, qualifications you have to meet to get either license. You have a certain amount of money you have to pay to get either license. I don't know about the electrical license since I haven't seen one in 12 years, but the Costco card is stripped on the back with an electronic strip and it has a photo ID on it. There are systems out there. DMV processes millions of people. There are processes. DMVs is more expensive than Costco, for certain security reasons.
Madam Chair, if I might, I think I may have something to add. Certainly, the division is more than willing to look at its current licensing scheme and make whatever changes might create efficiencies. This licensing change, the change in the date of your license renewal, is part of the system. That system is driven by the code change cycle on the national level. Our code changes every 3 years. One of the requirements in order to get your license renewed is to take an 8-hour course on the changes that took place in the code. So tracking who has had that course in the same time frame as the code change cycle, and at least that's the answer I got the first time I raised this question, because I raised the same question. Now, certainly we can look at that and see if there aren't ways that we can modify our continuing ed system, modify the way we train these individuals to accommodate a change in when they renew their license. But it is part of a system. It's not a standalone, go in, get your license renewed because it expired yesterday. It's part of a bigger system that is really driven by the code change cycle at the national level.
Thank you. Lori?
Chair Kalana, members of the subcommittee, if I may make a suggestion, I think it sounds like the department is willing to incorporate a discussion of the fee schedule into the budget note that the department has received and can include that information when they bring that information back to the emergency board.
Absolutely.
In terms of what we need to address today, I'd like to take you real briefly to the fiscal impact statement, if you may do that.
Are you ready to move on?
I just had one question in that regard, and I recognize that you'll be assisting us with a budget note, Laurie. But where these are photo required, I just wondered if maybe they would be, are they presently magstripe compatible with the bigger system? Do we know that?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I don't know that offhand. Certainly we can check.
This fits in perfectly with your OLCC cards, perfectly, because it would give you ID information. They could use that. They could use that with the OLCC issues right there. It just absolutely, and that's why I'm wondering. It's a photo ID by a state agency. If they don't have already the magstripe information on it, it's another form of ID that would fit in just absolutely perfectly. And again, I hate to see the state go out and through our building codes division have a system different from OLCC, different from DMV. But you know, if we can continue to make more uniform these kinds of licenses, it would sure be very, very helpful. So, and you were going to make a comment about the budget note.
Well, just Representative Butler, Chair Clarno, just that the department does have a budget note that includes a discussion of the electrical program and the fees, and they can include some work around the current fee schedule as well as for any opportunities for efficiency when they bring that information back to the emergency service.
Thank you very much.
I think that we folded right in.
Okay,
in front of you, you should see somewhere in your pile a revised fiscal impact statement. Right. After the agency was back yesterday and looked again at the fee schedule for these particular three licenses, we had some extensive discussion yesterday about an understanding that a third of these licensees renewed every year. Well, we found out that, no, they all renew in bulk at different points in a three-year cycle. So the dollars on this fee schedule, the effect on revenues, is somewhat different than the fiscal impact statement you saw yesterday. With this fee schedule in place, the department would receive an additional $371,955 in the 2001-2003 triennium and an additional $660,845 in the 2003-2005 biennium. So I just wanted you to be aware that there were some changes to the projected revenues that would result from these fees.
Okay.
And I just wanted to make one more comment that to remind you that when the department was looking at the cost of running the electrical program, it had identified that it would either need some fee increases in the electrical permit area, or as one option, these increases for the licensees. And the department may have to, if unable to put these fees into place, may have to go back and revisit implementing some kind of a permit increase that would impact a different area of the department's constituents.
Laurie, these are a total of $47,000 less than the early anticipated fees. Is this going to make a difference in just cash carryover, or is this the combination of the fees collected through 05?
I think Mr. Brewer can address how the difference in the fiscal impact impacts the Building Codes Division, as well as the possibility of removing the emergency clause and how that would impact the revenues for the department.
Okay. Madam Chair, the fiscal impact on the division will simply be to have a lower ending fund balance than was originally projected with the revised fiscal impact statement. That puts us in a somewhat precarious position. Certainly we'd like to carry what's expected in our prudent person balance. We need to get back to where we're doing that, and this simply means that we'll gain that benefits, that revenue in the subsequent biennium, not the first biennium as was originally planned. The impact of
Senator Dukes,
what is your budgeted ending fund balance?
Madam Chair, I believe it's in the neighborhood of $500,000 with prior to the revision of the fiscal impact statement. So I'd have to go back and get those exact figures and bring them back for you.
So about $450,000, I guess.
Madam Chair, with respect to the change in the emergency clause, on page 3 again, total impact without the emergency clause is indicated as $232,755 change. On page four, we have the list of our current staff in the electrical program. Our chief inspector is retiring on 7/1. Part of our plan to address this change would be to simply hold that position open for a 6-month period, name an acting chief inspector during that period of time. The impact of this will be a lower level of service available to the industry and to the jurisdictions that rely on the policy and technical services section you see there in terms of assistant chief and code specialist. So we go from 3 to 2 in that area for a 6-month period. At the top of the page under number one, you see the salary at step level 2 plus the OPE allowance of 38%. So it's $104,496 per inspector per biennium. So we would be eliminating 2 inspector positions. At this time, the feeling is that would likely be the master permit under the Salem staff, and likely one of the staff either out of the Roseburg or Pendleton office. One of the questions Representative Johnson raised yesterday was maintaining current service level. Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, there's no way I can sit here and tell you that we're going to do the same job with less staff.